just directly to the question. Because the first question is, what is your understanding of education? Or according to you, what factually constitutes education?
Well, what education should be is to give a person training so he can realize his full potential to become what he should be. In the wrong hands, in the hands of governments and other people who have material motives, education becomes distorted, and they want to make people into something artificial, into good citizens or this or that or good scholars. But real education is to bring out a person's real spiritual personality. You know, education doesn't mean to put something in somebody. It means to bring out. Educate means to draw out in Greek. So to bring out a person's spiritual realization and spiritual identity, that's real education.
And the second question is, how should we impart education then in general society, and how should we impart education within our ISKCON society, so in general society and then also in our ISKCON society?
Well, our business is to educate the world, the general society, about their spiritual life. And our idea of spiritual life is the highest one. We're not satisfied to teach some inferior or compromised conception of spiritual life. Not something half spiritual, half material. So we have to teach everybody how to be servants of Krishna, why they should want to be Krishna's servant, how to be Krishna's servant. This is the education we have to give people. If we have to teach them something else first, as preliminary, then okay. But the goal is to awaken their Krishna consciousness. Just like Jiva Goswami in the Sandarbhas talks about so many philosophical things. He talks about the concept of God, the concept of the super soul, about all the energies of the super soul, and so many complicated philosophical topics. But the purpose is to identify the absolute truth, identify our relationship with him, and the process. So in the later Sandarbhas, the Bhakti Sandarbha and Preeti Sandarbha, it's the process and the perfection of pure devotion, that's the culmination of the education. Otherwise, to study even the Supreme Soul is useless if it doesn't lead to the awakening of love of God. So that's what we have to educate the world, the people in general. We have to educate them to become devotees of Krishna. And in ISKCON, we have to educate our devotees to become perfect devotees. We have to perfect whatever is inferior, whatever is inadequate in their devotion has to be corrected.
Okay, and
just like you may go to a yoga school, you know, yoga camp or someplace in the Himalayas, because you're very sick, so they'll give you yoga exercises to cure your sickness. But then there's other students there who are studying yoga to gain spiritual perfection. It's not just for curing illnesses. So for the general public, they need to be cured of their materialism. And for the devotees, they need to be cured of whatever traces of materialism still are left and learn how to become perfect devotees.
But what about the, suppose if someone, like in general, people have usually get an education for the purpose of, I mean, getting a job, and for example, if someone had to become a grihastha-like, and they may need to...
Okay. They think they need that. They don't need it. They think they need it. They don't need these material things, but they think they need them, and they think they need material education to equip them to go out and get the material things, material success. Okay. But that's not our business to provide that education. We don't have to make material schools. There are thousands and thousands of material schools teaching all the material topics. What do we need to get involved in that business? You know, should we get involved in making refineries to make beer and whiskey? We don't need it. It's already being done. So why do we need to make universities? We don't need to. ISKCON has no business in making, you know, liquor refineries. We have no business in making universities either.
Okay, and the next is, which areas present weakness within the present day modern, I mean in this educational system, modern educational system, which area you think that present weakness in their educational system?
Because what the students, whatever, you know, it's one thing, it's bad enough, well, what the governments and the teachers intend to teach the students, they intend to teach them to become materialists. That's condemnable. We should condemnable. I don't know how to pronounce that. We should condemn it. Yeah, because you're teaching people how to become materialists. That's hellish. But what they're actually learning in the schools is much worse. They're not even becoming civilized materialists. They're becoming like cats and dogs. They're learning how to become sinful in so many ways. What the school wants to teach them is bad enough, but what they actually learn in those institutions is much worse. So what's wrong? It's making human beings into cats and dogs. That's the universities and the high schools and the public, you know, the grammar schools, they're just turning human beings into cats and dogs. Worse than cats and dogs. Cats and dogs, the cat doesn't come with a gun and shoot its teacher.
And then the next one, that's regarding this education system, and what weakness do you personally, which one you feel that ISKCON society, a weakness of the ISKCON societies? What weakness do you feel is constructive experience in regards to understanding and implementing with the concepts of education?
Well, it's the same weakness that we have in implementing the guru-disciple relationships and family life, marriage, education. All three have the same problem. Is that the individual who is going to be the leader, the guru or the husband or the teacher, has to be as much as possible an ideal person. And because we fail sometimes to do that, then we have so many difficulties. So we have to make ideal people. ISKCON has to train up ideal devotees. Devotees who are very, maybe not Paramahamsas, but at least are very, very Krishna conscious. Then they can be good gurus, good husbands and good teachers. So there's a problem. The problem is the quality of the leaders. I don't mean that to criticize anybody, but it's the fault of ISKCON that we have not trained up devotees to become more perfect. What do you expect? We're just beginning. So it's something we have to learn. But it's difficult and it'll take a long time. It's not that we should condemn ISKCON for it, very difficult thing to do in the material world.
Just take some
to make
time.
Perfect people.
That means just take for some time.
Well, it won't happen automatically. It will take time, but it won't happen automatically just by waiting. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of attention, a lot of thinking, a lot of working hard. How do you make perfect people? The most difficult thing. Prabhupada has given all the instructions how to do it. But still, it's the hardest, even with all the right instructions, it's a very hard thing to do. In Kali Yuga, when people are so imperfect, to make them perfect is not easy. But when we've made some devotees as perfect as possible, then they'll be very effective in giving spiritual education. So that's a problem. That's what happened along with the Gurukuls, is that the devotees were immature. They mistreated many of the children, and the schools failed, and now nobody wants to have anything to do with teaching devotee children. Everyone's afraid to get involved in education, for children at least. So education is like a terrible thing that everyone's afraid to go near.
So, for that, what are the remedies you feel that can help to rectify our shortcomings in education, you know?
We have to become more Krishna conscious. We have to chant Hare Krishna very sincerely, study the Gita and the Bhagavatam, and serve our acharyas with full dedication and selfless surrender, and then we'll become more fit. There's no, I don't think there's any material thing to do. You know, make some material change or some systematic change or organizational change. The change is we have to become more Krishna conscious.
Thank you. And the next one is, what are the main features, the foundational pillars or the essence of Varnashrama Dharma based society?
Well, the basic things, of course, what is underneath the whole Varnashram system, what is the foundation, is service to the Supreme Lord. But in the Varnashram system, that's not fully visible. The Varnashram is like Krishna's subconsciousness. You think you're worshipping demigods, you're thinking you're performing jagyas or just doing your duty, and you're not thinking so much about doing it as loving service to the Supreme Lord. You may have no thought of the Supreme Lord. But in the Varnashram system, consciously or unconsciously, that service is there. It's like unconscious service, subconscious service. But that basic principle is mostly invisible in the Varnashram system. It's not very obviously visible as it is in the practice of pure Krishna consciousness. We're chanting Hare Krishna, we're serving Krishna, worshipping the deity, doing service to the Guru. It's all very obviously service for God. The Varnashram system is not obvious. But there are some things that are obvious. Learning how to respect authority. That's what's taught in the Varnashram system. That's like the basic thing. Before you can accept the authority of God, you have to be ready to accept some authority. First you learn to accept the authority of the Brahmanas, and of the Vedas, the scriptures, and of your parents and your teachers, and respect to the demigods and the sages. So this is preliminary. That's what's taught in the Varnashram system. Can I get this? Hari Bol. Yes, Hari Bol. Yes. He is. He's right here with me. Do you want to speak to him? Yes. Here, Itachi Madan Mohan in Delhi wants to tell you something.
Hare Krishna. Okay.
You might want to take it outside because the reception's not good.
Hare Krishna Shamaya also. Yes, bro.
I'm sorry. Okay, yeah.
Okay, the next question is, in this present modern society, what do you think, can this Varnashrama Dharma based community be established? I mean, if it is yes, and how, and if it's not, why not?
It has to be, it will and has to be established within ISKCON, because Srila Prabhupada wants to be. He gives so much detailed description of Varnashram society, and then he finally told us that he wants this. This wasn't just meant as historical information about things in the past, but this is what he wants us to implement in the future. In ISKCON, he made it very clearly understood that's what he wants. So what the pure devotee wants will happen if we cooperate and help them make it happen, then we're glorified. Otherwise, someone else will do it. But it has to be established. What was the last part of the question?
If it is yes, how are you? If yes, how and I?
I said how, main reason I give for how it will be happen is because the pure devotee wants it to happen, and he is ordering that we should help him make it happen. It will happen by us following Prabhupada's instructions on the matter. I mean, the power is in the instructions. Nothing else we can do. Just try to carry out Prabhupada's instructions.
So, as you said, that if we are not doing it, and someone else will do it, since this Prabhupada desire can be it. Someone outside ISKCON, maybe.
Well, someone else will come into ISKCON. Someone else will come and serve Prabhupada if we don't do it.
Right.
Could you close that door? Because it's like. Go. I don't say it will happen outside of ISKCON, but we're not the only people in ISKCON. In the future, someone else will come and serve Prabhupada if we don't do it now.
Okay. And next, why are the principle of Varnashrama Dharma nowadays is... Varnashrama Dharma is not easily understood by people in general.
Well, there are obstacles, psychological obstacles. Because of our conditioning, modern conditioning, we don't want to accept a traditional society in which we have to submit to authority and accept a low position. Nobody wants to be a servant. Nobody wants to be less than the biggest person in modern society. Therefore, this is a great obstacle, psychological obstacle. Besides that, people don't have proper information. Nobody's explaining to them. And it's not just theoretical information that will convince people. People have to see example. So there's inadequate example of implementation of Varnashram society. We don't see it at work. We don't see a living Varnashram society, therefore we don't believe in it.
So that means that some of our community should work on it and show the world that we are living in such, in that type of...
Yes.
And next is, Srila Prabhupada used to say that first Varna, then Ashrama. And why did Srila Prabhupada instruct that first we have to, should have Varna and then Ashrama?
Really?
Yes, I mean, that's what it is.
Well, Varna, I don't know, because we already have Ashrama, at least in some way. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati organized the Gaudiya Math making distinction between, clear distinction between the duties of the different foreigners, or ashramas, grahastas and vanaprastha sannyasis. Of course, that was recognized even outside ISKCON, but there's like no place among the Babaji's. The only sadhus are the renunciants, and the grahastas are, you know, hardly the Vaishnavas at all. They don't get a chance to really be sadhus. But in the Gaudiya Mata and in ISKCON, all four ashrams are represented within the spiritual institution. And, you know, different, they wear different dress and they have different duties and responsibilities and privileges. So the ashram organization has already been done. It was done by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And it was carried it into ISKCON by Prabhupada just by taking it from the Gaudiya Mata. So I don't know what's meant there, because we had ashram organization already. Maybe there's some other kind of ashram, additional ashram organization that has to be done in the future. What's missing now is varna. You know, it's like you have a scale. You put, you know, you're going to weigh two different things. Mm-hmm. You know, and you have to put on each side of the scale. So you put too much on one side, then you have to start putting something on the other side. So we've done so much work in ashram, mm-hmm. Now we have to do some work in the varnas. Now you've loaded up the ashram side so much. We label people as grihastas. You can't live in the temple. We can't, you know, we're not going to give you money. You have to go out and get a job. But what are we supposed to do? We're grihastas. How are we supposed to have a spiritual life? So that hasn't been organized. You know, what are the occupational duties of the grihastas? How can they function as devotees out in the cruel world? That has to be organized. We've stamped these devotees as grihastas, kicked them out of the temples. Now what are they supposed to do? So therefore the Varna organization has to be done to save them.
What's the relationship between these two, Varna Ashrama and education?
Education is required to properly situate people in their varnas and ashrams, especially the two highest varnas. The brahmanas and kshatriyas need very solid and very thorough education. You cannot become a real brahman, a real kshatriya without very long education, many years. And even the vaishyas and shudras need some education. So in order to show people, teach people what their duties are, what their position is in varnashram society, that's the purpose of education. Let's say specifically varnashram education. If we were just giving pure Krishna conscious education, just chant Hare Krishna, serve Krishna, go back to Godhead, don't care about this world, then you don't have to teach the duties of the varnas and ashrams. You know, for those who are just going to serve Krishna, they go back to Godhead immediately. But that's a small minority. Everyone else needs to be taught about varnashram principles.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you mean that very rare people can concentrate on only serving Krishna?
Yeah, and have no material life. Very few people are ready for that.
Okay. And then can you elaborate on the concept of these three gyan, sambandha gyan, abhidya gyan, and prayogyana gyan in reference to varnashrama and in reference to education respectively?
Well, properly speaking, these three, gyana of sambandha, abhidya, prayojana, are knowledge of the Supreme Lord and his devotional service. You know, these terms are coming from the Vedanta, but the devotees, as Jiva Goswami explains in the Sandarbhas, these have to do with devotion, the Lord and his devotional service. So then we're asking, what's the relevance of the Lord and devotional service in Varnashram Dharma? You know, Samadhi Gyan is understanding of your relationship to God. So if you have an atheistic varnashram system, then there's no thought of that. There's no thought of your relationship to God, just the relationship to the king, to the Brahman, you know, to your the wife's relationship to her husband, but then you leave out the idea of the real, the most important relationship, relationship with God. If you leave that out, then there's no sambandh again, real sambandh again. Sambandh again doesn't mean, you know, your duty to the king, your duty to your husband. It means your duty to God. So Daivi Varnashram requires that. Otherwise, it's just this is material. We are a purely spiritual institution, and we haven't made a practical impact on the world because we haven't implemented Varnashram. But it doesn't mean now we're going to become material. Forget Krishna consciousness and just teach social organization. We want to keep the spiritual aspect and also make it available to people who have material interests, including many of our own devotees who would leave or lose their spiritual life because they have material needs. So let them fulfill their material needs within Krishna consciousness rather than go outside of it, and bring many people into Krishna consciousness. So, like I said that before, that the God consciousness is under the surface, it's invisible in the Varnashram system. We have to make it more visible, but still, there's only so much Krishna consciousness that many people can tolerate. Yeah. You tell people, Sarva Dharma Pratyajya, they'll say, very nice verse, but I can't do it. Very nice, I wish I could do it. So for those who can't do that, we have to give them something practical to do that will bring them to Krishna. Really, the sambandh again, the abhideya again, the prayojan again, that's for the devotees who are leading, directing the Varnashram society. They're the ones who are supposed to, especially prayojan again, knowledge of your real spiritual life, your relationship with Krishna. Only the most elevated devotees who are fully surrendered and fully realized, they're the ones who are going to know this sambandh again, the prayojan again. But if they're organizing the Varnashram society, if the pure devotees who have this higher knowledge are organizing the society, then those who participate in that society will get the benefit. Even though they don't have the knowledge, they're following people who do have the knowledge. So the importance of these three kinds of spiritual knowledge in Varnashram society is that the people who organize it should be very, very fixed up in that knowledge. The organizers, the leaders.
The next, the concept of compulsory education, I mean that where children are impelled to attend school until a certain age or certain level, is very much being promoted in modern day education. Can you comment as to its merits and demerits?
Its only merit is that it keeps children off the street and it keeps them out of the job market so that there's enough jobs around for everybody. Child labor was outlawed in many countries because the children were competing with grown-up people. The grown-up people want the jobs. So they kick the children out of the factories and send them to the prisons that are called schools and lock them up in the schools so they won't come in the factory and take your job away. That's the purpose of compulsory education. But it's not practical. It's just another prison. You know, lock the child up in the factory or lock him up in the school. The school is probably worse. Probably more dangerous. He might get his hand caught in a machine. But in the school, you can get his head blown off. So it's probably more dangerous than the school.
Yeah.
It's not required. You know, long education is not required for many people. People who are Shudras and Vaishyas don't need long education. Better that the child goes and goes to the store, the office of his father, and learns a trade. That's practical education. That's not child labor slavery. That's a practical education. It should be compulsory education, but most of the children should go to his father's store to learn the education. learning from his father or from some master, becoming an apprentice. That's practical.
But sometimes someone may argue that if they're not going to the school and they will not get any experience, there is no, their brain will be like...
Yeah, if you don't go to hell, you won't experience suffering. You know, so you have to go to the hell that's called school and experience how miserable the material world is. Well, I don't see it, how it's necessary. You know, school is just hell.
Okay. Can you briefly outline the difference between what is called traditional education and modern education? Could you define formal, informal, and non-formal education?
I don't know about that last question, but the first one. Modern world takes everything and makes it into a product to be sold, purchased, and consumed. So education is also a product that you buy and you swallow it and, you know, it comes out your rear end. I don't know. So education is also made into a material commodity, a thing that you buy. You pay money, someone has to teach you because you paid the money. But traditional education, the teacher doesn't ask any money, and therefore he has some brahminical privilege, because he doesn't take money for his teaching, therefore he can decide who he will teach and what he will teach. If you're a paid teacher, paid by the students or paid by the government, then you're not a Brahmin. That's not brahminical. Or it's low-class Brahmin. You know, a high-class Brahmin doesn't take money for his teaching, and therefore he has some, you know, dignity and some right to teach the way he wants to teach. That's traditional education. The teacher is in control. The teacher decides what to teach, who to teach. It's not a business run by the governments and big corporations. It's run by the teachers. And there's service to the teacher, worship of the teacher, respect for the teacher, and that's the basis of education. When you get the blessings of the teacher, then what you learn is fruitful. Otherwise, it's just information crammed in your head and doesn't do anything to improve you as a person. But when you satisfy your teacher with service and devotion, then the education actually improves your personality.
And what about this? Could you define formal, informal? My understanding, formal and informal mean like formal education, maybe someone goes to school, and informal or non-formal, that someone like learned from his father at home. Can you define it?
Well, that's like that, I guess. But I don't know, informal and non-formal, I don't know what the difference is. I don't know, I'm not so familiar with this terminology. Formal is mean you lock them up in a school. Yeah, you put them in prison. And informal is, you know, you can do it at home. But I don't know what non-formal education is, I don't know.
Okay.
So I can't really say about that, I don't know.
Okay, let's go. And what would you say is the main downfall of modern education?
People who are supposed to be teachers are no better than cats and dogs, and they don't know the purpose of life. So they're not fit to be teachers. We have unfit people teaching. What do you expect the students will become?
Worse.
Yeah, no better. That's all I can say about that. I mean, that's the main thing. That's the main downfall.
Okay. The next is, what are the main foundational pillars of education?
Character. No. The foundation of education are the teachers. The teachers are brahmanas. Brahmins and kshatriyas have to be selfless. They have to have an attitude of selfless service to society. Such people can the kshatriyas can protect the citizens well, and the teachers can give real education, if they're selfless in their own attitude. But if they're selfish and materialistic, they cannot give real protection and cannot give real education. So it's that, that attitude of service and selflessness that's the real pillar.
And what are the requisites
yes.
for being a qualified teacher and a qualified student?
Well, a teacher has to be a Brahman. He has to, like I said, selfless. He has to be clean, he has to be truthful, honest. He has to be simple. He has to have faith in the scriptures. And have good knowledge and realization of that knowledge. These are the requirements of a Brahman. He can be a good teacher. And someone who wants to be a student should be willing to hear carefully with faith and to do service. If you don't want to serve, then you're not going to be a good student. You just want to take. You don't want to give anything, you just want to take. Then that's not the proper attitude for a student. You have to trust your teacher, you have to have respect for the teacher and do service to the teacher and listen very carefully. Then you can be a good student.
And next, what should make up the curriculum of in education, and how much of the curriculum should be from the traditional sources and how much should be from the other sources?
Well, there's not one curriculum that, I don't think there should be only one curriculum, because there's an ideal curriculum for the best students to be taught by the best teachers, but that's only for a small percentage of society. Pure spiritual education, unfortunately, it's not for everybody. So there are many, like many devotee parents, feel a need that their children need a material education also. So someone has to provide that. They may get it from devotee schools, they may get it from, they may get it from material schools, they may go outside and get it from materialists. But, so, can we stop for a minute?
Yes.
Okay. The files are on here. You can bring this to Dermot if you want. You can bring this to the school, give it to Dermot. Ask him to
taking shelter.